Welcome. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this. Welcome, everybody. By myself. I would like to welcome y'all to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. The fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland is where I have taken up residence, in the sunny slave South Pacific Island nation. And it's very, very nice, especially this time of year, where, in fact, I was going to make some kind of a lewd reference to sweatiness and parts of the male anatomy, but this is a family show. So we'll go straight to our guest. His name is Scott Onstott, and that's spelt O-N-S-T-O-T-T, and some of the info that he's going to present is assuredly O-T-T. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you, Vinny. It's good to be with you.
Now, you've been making this video series called Secrets in Plain Sight that goes into an awful lot of very interesting things to do with architecture, ley lines, any business with occult symbolism or anything in there?
Well, that very title is Secrets in Plain Sight, and occult means hidden or secret. And so a lot of the things I'm showing are not in public awareness, so I'm trying to bring that to people's attention.
Well, you know, Scott, it's a very interesting coincidence that we've got you on today, because last night my girlfriend was showing me a new TV series called 666 Park Avenue. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't heard of it.
All right. Dig this. The devil's living in an apartment complex, right, on 999 Park Avenue, but there's a reflection McThingy around the front or whatever, so it's reverse 666. And the history of it is there was this dark occult kind of little sect called the Dragon Brotherhood, okay? And the hotel is called the Drake Hotel, which we know Drake means dragon, and all the floors are black and white tiles like the Masonic Brotherhood. I thought that was very interesting.
That is very interesting. It reminds me of 666 Fifth Avenue in New York City, which is right across the street from Rockefeller Center. And it has a lot of interesting symbolism in it as well. I wrote a blog post about that, which is just called 666.
Would you be able to explain the significance of that?
Well, I think that people tend to think it's the devil's number, right? But I see it differently. I see it as part of a family of numbers that are all single repetitive digits, like 555, 666, all of the numbers like that. And they have sort of I would think of it as a hyper-dimensional signature, something that comes to us from a higher dimension. And people that use these numbers are in some way tuning into that knowledge. I would say that the Washington Monument is a fascinating monument to this relationship in that it is 555 feet 5 inches high. It's actually, I think it was intended to be 555 feet 5.5 inches high, but it actually came in just 3/8 of an inch less in reality. But that number is equal to 6,666 inches. So there we have this amazing connection in the world of measurement between fives and sixes. And I have a lot to say about the relationship of six to five, and I go into that in my movies and in my book and blog and so on. But 666 is just one of these examples of these repetitive numbers, like 1111. A lot of people are interested in that so-called master number. A lot of people see that time. They you know, does this ever happen to you, where you just look up and it's 1:11 p.m. or it's 11:11 a.m.?
Well, I got up yesterday morning and my computer was shut down and my phone was plugged into it, you know, on a little USB charger. And so when I turned my computer on, my phone flashed on and it's got the clock on it. It was 9:11 a.m.
There you go. Yeah, I think that what happens is if you're tuned into a particular number, let's say you're thinking a lot about 9:11 and that mega ritual, then you're going to see 9/11s all over the place. And it's going to be, it's going to seem like it's more than coincidence that this number is popping up in your reality. So there's this phenomenon of synchronicity I'm really interested in, where the interior of your consciousness is reflected outside in the exterior world, sort of as a confirmation that there's this interconnection between all things.
Yeah, it's like that with me in the number 33. What's interesting, though, is I watch a little bit of cartoons as well, like Family Guy. Have you ever heard of this show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Family Guy, Stewie Griffin and Brian Griffin, they're teleporting around, and they teleport into this the Super Bowl. And the announcer goes, "Welcome to Super Bowl 33." I was like, okay. And then there was another one where there was these two basketballers coming out. One's number 32 and one's number 33. And there was another one, I think, on an American Dad, was made by the same guy. And they're sitting in this, what's it called? In this man's mansion, you know, like a man cave. And they've got a scoreboard for one of those little, sort of like a skee ball machine. And the score's 33. Well, they're sitting there talking on the couch, just in the top left-hand corner. And I don't think that's coincidence when it's in a piece of artwork or a television show or a movie. I don't think that can be left to straight coincidence. Not if you see it, as I have, in almost every single episode.
Yeah, these things tend to pop out at you, don't they? I see these numbers every place. And it reminds me of in the movie The Matrix, the original movie, Neo's passport expired on September 11th, 2001. Which is just funny that how could that be? Why would that happen, you know? There's so many of these things that give you pause to reflect upon the nature of reality. Is there a global conspiracy that's happening where people are placing these numbers in the public domain? Or is it something more subtle? Are these numbers percolating up through the art director's mind who put that passport in that movie? And maybe that person wasn't even consciously aware of that date at that time, of the significance that date would have. Because that movie came out, I believe it was in 99. And nevertheless, the number is there. So I tend to think it's more of this latter explanation quite often. And that's not to say that conspiracies don't exist, because they certainly do. But I think that quite often people are, they follow a hunch or something, and they end up creating a building that's 864 feet high, or they end up requesting the city planning department for an address, which is 555 California Street or something like that. Why didn't they choose 557? You know, there's certainly a ring to these numbers, and we may not consciously understand it, but there's definitely something there where you choose certain numbers preferentially over others, and it tends to boil down to just a short list of numbers. And so that's
kind of going by feel.
I'm sorry?
Do these numbers have certain sensations or connotations affected with them? Like, are you going by feel in some cases? You know, just for some reason I felt like that was the right number.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how people end up choosing them. But I think that in reality there's probably more to it. And I would say that you can get in touch with that by studying number and looking at each one of the numbers, 1 through 9, and trying to, you know, feel its character. And I would say that the number 6 forms a hexagon. Hexagons are seen as structural elements in the natural world. Like if you have a stack of drinking straws or logs, they form hexagonal patterns. Bees make hexagonal honeycombs. There's a giant hexagon on the north pole of Saturn that is in the shape of a hexagon. And there's been two NASA spacecraft that have photographed it and it's a persistent piece of geometry that's larger than the Earth, that's in the form of a hexagon. And so I think the hexagon boils down to being this kind of structural element. You can think of it as sort of a dead or skeletal structure that the natural life uses or needs. And then I think five is quite the opposite. Five is sort of representing life because it forms the pentagram, the pentagon. The pentagram has phi embedded in it fractally, and phi is so much a part of all living things, from sunflowers to the human body. You find phi relationships there. And so, in a way, this ratio that I look at, I look at the relationship of six to five. It's sort of the relationship of the non-living to the living, or structure to life. And it's in that relationship or marriage that we find the alchemy. And I think that's sort of what the Washington Monument is sort of about, ultimately. It's this union of opposites. If you look at the Washington Monument, it's hard to not see it as a phallic symbol, right? Well, what's surrounding it is a vesica Pisces in the landscaping around it, which is a feminine symbol. So we have this sort of bringing together of male and female energies embodied in this obelisk, which is quite interesting.
I've always found it interesting that they've got this massive phallic symbol so close to the White House, where it's occupied by another giant phallic symbol, the president.
That's right. It's very close to it.
Yeah. I've got a joke for you. Do you know why six is afraid of seven?
Why?
Because 7, 8, 9.
There you go. Actually, my son told me that one not long ago. You know, it's a great joke for the younger age group.
Yeah. Maybe lost on both of us. Anyway, moving on. There's also a number of different elements that I've looked for in my home city of New Zealand. And have you noticed how there's usually some kind of giant spire phallic symbol in the middle of major urban centres? And in Auckland, we've got this giant thing called the Sky Tower. There's a giant phallic syringe-type thing, you know, jutting out into the sky. And we've also got what's known as One Tree Hill on Coyle Park, which is a 330-hectare piece of land that's owned by Freemasons New Zealand. And the Masonic obelisk at the top is, I believe, 33 metres tall.
Now, it seems so unlikely that the area of the land would be 330 hectares unless that was planned, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It reminds me very much of the George Washington National Masonic Memorial in Alexandria, Virginia. And this is 333 feet high. And it's a replica of the Lighthouse of Alexandria, Egypt. And it has a gigantic Freemason symbol out front. The compass is in square. And I don't see anything wrong with that, with using these numbers, because it's tuning into the harmonics of the universe. See, that's the part that people generally aren't aware of. The significance of these numbers, right? And that's what I'm trying to show. 33 is an incredible number. And I can go into some of that for you later if you like.
I really would like you to, but what I'd heard is that the reason why these obelisks are put in centers of areas is somehow alluded to drawing Luciferian energy down into the area or something like that. Can you corroborate or dismiss that?
Well, I don't know. I don't have any proof or disproof of that. That's sort of a statement that's hard to to evaluate, I guess, because I don't have anything more to say that's not true or that is true. It certainly could be. And I think the important thing is to keep an open mind and to keep that potential theory running in your mind, that there could be some kind of control grid that's connecting all the obelisks, you know, in some kind of matrix or something.
Ley lines.
Ley lines, right. And on the other hand, another theory is just that these are like acupuncture points on the Earth, and they're harmonizing with the Earth energies in a more natural, holistic way.
Yeah. And well, so the Chinese...
The way to find out is to go there and feel it yourself. And
we're coming to break now, Scott. The Chinese built a lot of pyramids in China, and they said that, yeah, it was like acupuncture, balancing the earth's chi, they said. We'll be right back with Scott Onstott, ladies and gentlemen.
Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual.
Welcome back.
I am not credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and profound.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Scott Onstott from... hold on a second. I'm just kind of messing up today. I don't know. It's the end of the week. I'm very tired.
Canada. I live in British Columbia.
Cambridge, Columbia. Well, that's nice.
I live on a remote island called Cortez Island.
Cortez Island? Mm-hmm. Is there a stolen Aztec gold somewhere near you as well?
No, but there was once a Spanish ship that passed this way, and they named a few of the islands here. And then they never came back. So we're left with the names, though.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, anyway, back onto this. I wanted you to actually explain the significance and elaborate on the number itself, 33.
Sure. 33 is, in my mind, it's sort of like it represents the whole range. And 32 is like... In the Scottish Rite, that's the highest degree that you can earn on your own, and then only a few individuals are tapped or selected to become the 33rd degree members. And this relationship is similar to the human spine, where we have 32 bones in the spinal column, and then the 33rd bone, if you will, is the skull. And so... you have to work your way up through all of the Jacob's ladder, if you will, up the spine, and then you become a master when you reach the highest level. And in the natural world, this number is echoed in the sun, because the sun is 333,000 times more massive than the Earth. And I was amazed that when I came across an article in 2010, that said that scientists at Stanford University discovered that the sun's core rotates once every 33 days. And the sun has a volume that's 33 orders of magnitude larger than, let's say, a pair of dice or a marble, something that would fit in the palm of your hand. And then if you look down into the microscale, the Planck length, which is the smallest measurable length in the quantum scale, is 33 orders of magnitude smaller than that object in the palm of your hand. So that marble in your hand is right in the middle, if you will, between the Planck length and the sun. So it's kind of beautiful if you look at it that way. But 33 is always this ladder. It's the full range, all the way down and all the way up.
And, as above, so below.
Exactly, as above, so below. And then another thing that's quite interesting is that if you want to go in a spaceship and leave the Earth, you have to go a certain speed to do that. It's called escape velocity. Well, that's just beyond Mach 33. You have to exceed Mach 33. That's 33 times the speed of sound in order to escape from the gravity well of Earth. And then it just so happens that Mach 33 is 11.1 kilometers per second. There's those repetitive ones again. On the other hand, if you want to go into the Earth, into the ocean, if you go every 33 feet below the surface of the ocean that you go, that's one atmosphere. Another way of thinking of that is that the entire Earth's atmosphere has the pressure equivalent to a column of water 33 feet high. And so these are some of the natural resonances that we have with 33 and our systems of units. So this is also very key, is the way that we measure things is implicated in this system. And in mythology,
how does it translate from the metric to the imperial measurement systems? Is I think like a meter is 3 point something feet, and 10 meters is 33 feet. Is that correct?
That sounds about right. I know that the way I think of it is 1 mile is approximately equal to 5 kilometers. So phi is 1.618. And so that's sort of how those systems are connected in a way, is through the golden number, the golden ratio. And I hit upon a discovery in metrology that involves the 6/5 ratio, 6 over 5, or that's equivalent to the decimal 1.2. So 6/5 times 33,333,333 meters is the polar circumference of the Earth. And it's very accurate. I don't have the number in front of me, but I think it's in excess of 99.9% accurate. And so the metric system is sacred in a way, contrary to popular belief, because it's very elegantly expressing the size of the Earth. And then there was a gentleman named John Charles Webb Jr. who discovered that the Great Pyramid's location on the Earth is encoded by light speed in meters per second. It's at 29 point, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but 29.9 something 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 degrees north. And if you just use all the numbers for light speed, and it's 299 million something 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 meters per second, and the numbers are exactly the same. And so the Great Pyramid is located using light speed in meters per second. And that sounds absurd, because how could the ancient Egyptians have known the metric system or light speed or been able to accurately survey the Earth with such precision? And I think the answer, we have to look into some areas like higher dimensions, because the people who put the pyramid there, maybe they were impulsed or influenced, or they just had a hunch that this is the place where this structure has to go. It could be like that, or it could be extraterrestrials came down and were the architects and told the human builders to go ahead and build it right here and didn't share with them the knowledge of why. That could also be.
But, well, the placement of the pyramids also mirrors the Orion's Belt constellation too, doesn't it?
That's right. Robert Bival and Adrian Gilbert wrote that book, The Orion Mystery, back in the 90s, about that. And it's uncanny. Those three pyramids perfectly mirror the heavens above. And so the pyramids, or the Great Pyramid in particular, is just full of information and wisdom that can be unpacked and decoded. For example, Graham Hancock wrote about the number 432 and how it relates to the pyramid and how the pyramid encodes the the circumference of the Earth and the polar radius. And if memory serves, I think the perimeter of the base times 43,200 is the number of feet in the Earth's equatorial circumference. It's either feet or miles, I don't recall. And then the height of the Great Pyramid times 43,200 is equivalent to the Earth's polar radius, again, in feet or miles. I don't recall the unit there.
Isn't there some sort of significant frequency as well that's 432 hertz?
Yes, it is. There's a movement in opera to reset the tuning. The concert pitch is currently 440 hertz worldwide for the A above middle C. And there's a movement to make that a little flatter down to 432 hertz because apparently it's a lot easier on the human voice. And it seems to have a much greater resonance with as above, so below. When you key your whole musical system to this number 432, you're tying in with a huge amount of information. If you look at what is half of 432, it's 216, which is 6 times 6 times 6. What is half of 216 is 108. And 108 is a number that's long been associated with the moon Japa Mala prayer necklaces. I have 108 beads. I believe the emergency telephone number in India is 108 instead of 911. And the lunar radius is 1,080 miles. And it goes, there's a whole laundry list of 108 correspondences. I'll give you one more. The element silver has an atomic weight of 108, and silver has always been associated with the moon. And if we go the other way from 432, if we double it, we get 864. And that's the solar number, because the sun's diameter is 864,000 miles. And I believe that's 99.9% accurate.
So does that mean, in a sense, that the number 432, or at least the 432 hertz, is kind of like a resonant frequency for humans in between the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun? So it's kind of like a nexusing sort of frequency, sort of thing.
Yeah, you could think of it that way. It's in this progression that starts with 108, and it moves all the way up to 3, 4, 5, 6. Because if you double 864, you get 1728. And if you double that, you get 3, 4, 5, 6, which has a nice sequential ring to it, doesn't it? And I believe the polar radius of the Earth in Egyptian royal miles is 3, 4, 5, 6 Egyptian royal miles. So all of these systems are resonating with this sequence, which is kind of amazing. There's nothing in science which says that should be the case.
I've also got this question as well. I'd like to ask you.
Yeah.
These numbers have significance and they have connections and things of that nature. But do they have a physical or measurable effect if you were to perhaps place a building on a particular area, or make it a particular height, or put it on a particular land with a particular circumference,
I don't think that you can measure it with our current electromagnetic instruments and figure out why it means why it's significant at this point. But I don't think it would be impossible to do that. We may have a trace of it in our physical reality. There may be a shadow of this higher dimension here that may be measurable, but I don't know the technology for that at this point. I think it's a subtle energy, and I think people that are sensitive can sometimes feel it or tune into it. And, you know, I don't claim to have that ability myself, but I stumble on these correspondences and find it fascinating. I have another structure that just popped to mind, and that is, when I was a teenager, I was learning to drive a stick shift in the parking lot of this particular government building in California. And I found out only a couple of years ago that its latitude is 33 degrees, 33 minutes, and 33 seconds north. It's called the Chet Holyfield Federal Building, and it's in the shape of a ziggurat. The building is known in the area as the ziggurat.
I don't know what a ziggurat is, I'm sorry.
What's that?
I don't know what a ziggurat is, I'm sorry.
A ziggurat is a Babylonian-style pyramid or a step pyramid. It's similar to the ziggurats in Iraq. And this particular structure has on its seventh and highest level the Department of Homeland Security. And I find that really fascinating. It was also designed by William Pereira, who is the architect who designed the Transamerica Pyramid in San Francisco, another highly symbolic structure that I showed. I went into some of the details about that in my Volume 1 film. But that structure, if you include its mast, is 864 feet high. So it resonates with the sun. And it's like, I think of it as America's tallest obelisk.
Have you heard of the Pyramid of the Sun in Bosnia that was recently discovered?
Yes, that's an amazing structure. Apparently, it's very large.
It's bigger than the Pyramid of Giza, something like 700 plus feet.
Yes, it's huge. There's lots of pyramids still yet to be discovered, and only in the last couple of years they've been doing this satellite archaeology where they've been discovering buried cities in Egypt. It's incredible what people are finding, even in Google Earth. They're just noticing things. And
Scott, unfortunately, we're coming to break. I'd like to actually continue this right after it in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Scott.
I got some so-called friends. My right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah, welcome back to the Vinnie Ezra Show. My very special guest, Scott Onstott from Secrets Hidden in Plain Sight. And we've been talking about numbers and architecture and things of that nature. And you were getting on to ziggurats and something else, the new pyramids being discovered and what have you. So, I don't know, has there been a big study of ziggurats called the Ziggurat Papers or something, and do you need some kind of a filter in order to smoke them?
I don't know. Yeah, ziggurats are like pyramids, you know, but they have steps instead of smooth sides. And the way I think it worked is that they had usually seven steps on the ziggurat, and that they represented the whole hemisphere of the Earth as they divided it into seven bands. And so it was sort of like a map of the world, or an axis mundi. This is a primal impulse, is to create your temple as a microcosm of the larger world. And this is one way to do it, is to make a mountain and have it represent the whole Earth. And you can do that with measurements and with symbols and so on. And another way is to encode distances between sacred sites. So let me get back to the number 864. There's a lot there. If we look at the distance between Stonehenge and Silbury Hill, it's 86,400 feet. And this was discovered by John Michell and Robin Heath in a book called The Lost Science of Measuring the Earth. They also analyzed Silbury Hill and found that the cross-section of it is all proportioned in units of 8.64 feet. So that's incredible that somehow this number was not only encoded in the design of this man-made mountain, which is the largest Neolithic mountain in Europe, I believe, encoded there, and also they encoded it in the distance from that mountain to Stonehenge. Also, if we look at the number of seconds in a day, there are 86,400 seconds in a 24-hour period. There's those numbers again. It all relates to the sun, moon, earth system. Remember, the sun's diameter is 864,000 miles. When I say something like that, I don't mean it's exactly, precisely 864,000 miles and no change. But it is 99.9% accurate. So there's always a tiny little inaccuracy there, which is generally less than a tenth of a percent. And the way I understand that is that there's sort of a template or blueprint that is in a higher dimension, and it is exact. But in our real world, it's always going to be slightly off. And that has to do with, for example, on a sunflower, we have a 5-spiral there. And it's just slightly off from the perfect 5-spiral because you can't have a fractional seed. You have to have a whole seed, right? So the spiral is going to actually use the Fibonacci sequence rather than the spiral. You can also look at it in music. There's a slight gap called the Pythagorean comma, and that is... I think there's, if you have 12 perfect fifths, they go up almost perfectly 7 octaves, but not quite. It's just slightly off. And there's that little gap there again. Now back to 864, I noticed that the 35-millimeter film format that's used in cameras and in full-frame digital SLRs today, it has an area of 864 square millimeters. So we have this solar number representing the area of a photograph. And what is a photograph but something that captures light? So it seems very apropos that particular dimension is used to capture light because it resonates with the sun.
Could I propose to you a theory? Mm-hmm. These numbers seem to encode everything, whether or not we're aware of them. Is it possible that these numbers, regardless of our awareness of them, truly govern our lives and the way the Earth kind of goes about its business and the universe itself?
I think so. I think that it's these numbers are keys to understanding our universe and understanding how everything really works. I think that it's sort of a lost science that we're in the process of rediscovering, and I think it's also evidence of higher consciousness because it is certainly not random, and it is so not random that I can't imagine that it would just happen in some kind of chaotic process. It's either part of some kind of matrix that is so brilliant and so far beyond my understanding, or it's the product of a mind. Maybe in some way we're all in the mind of God, and you could say that this is a matrix if we're in this imagination space, which is all ultimately based on mathematics and geometry. I think it all boils down to that. This is basically like the code that underpins our reality. are these numbers and these geometries.
Is that why it's called sacred geometry? Because it's actually one to do with God?
I think so. You can look at it that way. It's sacred because it's when you realize the brilliance of it, it's so staggering that I think the word that pops to mind is sacred. Unbelievable geometry, or believable but mind-blowing geometry would be another adjective to describe it. But so often in our secular world, we don't really even understand the word sacred anymore, and we think that's some kind of religious connotation, and it doesn't have to be. It can be, but I don't think it has to be tied with religion necessarily. It should be tied more with spirituality, which is what the impulse of religion, all religions are inspired from, essentially, is from spirituality.
I would believe that the most mainstream religions are inspired from spirituality, but then grew in order to shut it out and keep it away from people.
That's right, yeah. I think that all too often religions become they become corrupted, and they become a system of control. And, for example, if you connect directly with God and you have some experiences in your, you know, phenomenological experiences in meditation or whatever, I think the church would say, you can't have that. You know, you have to have one of our priests or something is the connection to God. And, you know, at least that's the downside of religion, is they want to have sort of a monopoly on spirituality.
It sounds very similar to the structure of drug dealing, whereby in order to protect your business interests, you make sure that everybody's got a middleman to go through.
Yeah. It's a classic system, system of distributors. But it's
like
not
Blockbuster
necessary.
Video.
I think you can connect directly with it. I think in a way, all these numbers are a means of reconnecting with spirituality in a rational way. You can say, okay, rationally, you can look into all these numbers that I'm saying, look them up yourself, do a little research, and then you'll probably realize that there is really a mystery there also. And it's sort of a gateway into spirituality, into the sacred realm.
Could that mean that it's also conversely a gateway into, like, let's say that's a positive realm that you could get into, you know, godly spirituality. Mm-hmm. Could it go the other way into darkness and evil?
It certainly could, yeah. You could, if I talk about the reality of higher dimensions, and there could be, you know, beings there, they could be angels or demons there, right? So it just depends on who you're resonating with and who you want to contact, right? So I think that's a open possibility that some of these things could be done, at the behest of demons, whereas other things could be done at the behest of angels, and then other things could be done, even transcending the subtle realm and going into the causal, formless realm, which sort of transcends duality. You could even go in and have non-dual mysticism that could be influencing the people, the decision makers here on the ground. You know, if you were a higher dimensional being and you wanted to express some beautiful truths about the universe, it might be a very efficient way to influence certain key architects to build buildings in a certain way, in the hopes that people would eventually realize what these buildings were encoding. That might be one way to do it.
Well, Scott, we've got one more hour coming up after this break, and so far it seems we keep getting interrupted by breaks just as soon as we get going. quite frustrating because we want to hear more from you. Conveniently, we have another hour. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Scott on Stop.